All right, Madam, we are ready to go. Mr. Nixon, the floor is yours.
Good evening. I'm John Nixon, Secretary of the Cambria Lions Club. On behalf of the club and the League of Women Voters of San Luis Obispo County, I welcome you to the Candidates Forum for Board of Directors seats on the Cambria Community Services District. The Cambria Lions Club is enthusiastic and proud to co-sponsor this important event with the League of Women Voters, giving the community an opportunity to hear from the candidates. The four candidates, Karen Dean, Tom Gray, Harry Farmer, David Pearson. We're eager to hear their views on the important issues that impact our community. I'm also pleased to introduce Sharon Whitney, who's with the League of Women Voters and who is the moderator for this evening. Sharon?
Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Yes, the League is very happy to be here. And I, too, want to welcome the candidates and everybody for this Candidates Forum for the Cambria Community Services District, which I will also refer to as CCSD. For your safety, of course, we're hosting this meeting through Zoom. There are four candidates for three contested seats. The candidates, as you've heard, are Karen Dean, Harry Farmer, Tom Gray, and David Pearson. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization. This means we neither endorse nor oppose any candidate or political party. It also means that we do study the pros and cons of issues and take positions on them. And by the way, this is the 100-year anniversary for the right of all women in the United States to vote in national elections. I am Sharon Whitney. I am the moderator. Behind the scenes, Jean Chinichi of Cambria helps look at the questions and helps sort them in terms of how many we have. And also behind the scenes, we have Cynthia Pretzel, who's the timer from San Luis Obispo, and I am also from San Luis Obispo. I will tell you the forum rules. All candidates have agreed to act with civility and decorum. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for an opening statement. There were 64 questions from the community that were submitted to the League, which we have culled to 12. Each candidate will have an equal chance to speak to the issues raised. Each candidate will have a minute and a half to respond to each question. The moderator will rotate which candidate goes first for each question. And the candidates have been told about this. The moderator has discretion to extend the time limit if any question is too complex to address in 1.5 minutes. The League's timer will notify the candidate when they have 30 seconds left and when to stop. And if you're mid-sentence, the candidate may finish that sentence. I'm going to give some definitions of acronyms that you are likely to hear. Most of you probably already know these, but I had to familiarize myself so I didn't stumble over them. CCSD is Cambria's Community Service District. EWF stands for the Emergency Water Supply Project. SWF stands for Sustainable Water Facility. NCAC stands for North Coast Advisory Council. CCC stands for California Coastal Commission. And the WWL stands for Water Waitlist. With that, we will move into the opening statement. Tom, you have the first opening statement. Harry, your second. Karen, your third. And David, your fourth. Please go, Tom.
Thank you, Sharon. I want to start out by saying hello to all the people who've tuned in to this broadcast, as it were, and to watch this forum online. I really appreciate your interest in the CCSD campaign, and I hope you'll find our discussion illuminating. I also want to give a special thank you to the League of Women Voters, the Lions Club, and John Nixon, and AJP Video for carrying out a somewhat difficult mission to recreate what is usually a live event on an online forum like this. And I think it's going well, and I think it will go well. And I really salute their work, and it's a lot of work that went into preparation for this. I'm going to give you a little summary of who I am and why, you know, why I want to run and why I want to get elected. I've been in Cambria for 15 years, and I have plenty of experience in public life here. I've held several leadership positions in the North Coast Advisory Council. I currently serve on the CCSD's Resources and Infrastructure Committee. And I, at the county level, I am a Supervisor Gibson's appointee on the Water Resources Advisory Committee. But my motivation right now is to be in a position where I can actually get something done and not just advise and not just learn, but also apply knowledge that I've learned. And my campaign, much of my campaign has been consisted of knocking on doors, talking to people, listening to them, and finding out what they think. And they have many concerns. They don't like the water rates. They are worried about having fires. They're worried about having enough water. They don't want Cambria to change. And they wonder if the CCSD is up to the challenges that face Cambria. I want to address all of these subjects in the course of this debate. And I also, more than that, want to, you know, if elected, do something about them. I want to deliver results and not drama. And I thank you for listening. I look forward to the questions.
Thank you, Tom. Harry, you're next.
Thank you very much, Sharon. Good evening. You know, first, I wish to thank also the League of Women Voters for arranging this candidates forum. This is going to help inform you, the voting public, so you know a little bit more about the four of us and, you know, where we stand on the issues. So I'm Harry Farmer. I'm a 34-year resident of Cambria, longtime community and environmental activist. Of course, it was my good fortune to be elected to your Cambria CSD Board of Directors in November of 2016. And it's been an honor to represent both the residents of our town as well as the natural environment that surrounds us. And I'm both grateful and encouraged by the progress that's been made toward many of the goals I hope to achieve during my time in office. For example, the board we now have is more representative of the varied viewpoints that exist in our town. The standing committees on finance, resources and infrastructure, and policy have allowed for greater public involvement in providing knowledge and insight, increasing trust in the board and its decision-making. I've helped reveal the ongoing amount of money the district has spent and continues to spend on our water facility. I've questioned budgetary spending and voted against it when necessary, and have opposed the yearly rate increase on your services bill. I've encouraged the PG&E Sustainable Solutions Turnkey Program that will help upgrade Cambria's water and wastewater operations. As improvements are made, our wastewater plant will run more efficiently and reduce electrical use and costs. Water department upgrades will continue to provide water storage available for immediate firefighting, as well as decreased leakage in the water delivery system, creating greater water availability and security without harming the environment. There's, of course, more I could tell you about myself, my actions as director, and where I stand on the issues, which will likely come up during this event. If you wish to know more about me, by the way, you can please feel free to visit my website, hfforccsd.com. That's my initials, HF, the number 4, ccsd.com. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Harry. Karen, please.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters and the Lions Club for the opportunity to speak to our fellow Cambrians and for AGP Video for broadcasting this and to the public for joining in to see what our positions are. I'd like to give you a little bit of background first about who I am and what experiences I've had that I think would help me become a good director. I've been a Cambria homeowner since 1994. Prior to retiring and becoming a full-time Cambria resident in 2013, I owned and operated my own interior design and fabrication business for over 25 years. This gave me a real appreciation for budgeting, spending limits, and financial savvy. I also served on the board of directors of a property owners association in the Clovis Foothill for 12 years, the majority of that as the board president. I've paid very close attention through all of these years to the issues facing our community, especially the water situation, our aging infrastructure needs, the use of our ratepayer funds, and protection of our environment. I've done extensive research to learn the history behind all of these issues and gain the knowledge of all the efforts being undertaken to address them going forward. I've been a volunteer committee member serving as vice chair on the CCSD Standing Committee on Resources and Infrastructure since it was first formed in 2018 and to the present, and have been participating in several ad hoc and subcommittee meetings relating to infrastructure. I also previously served on the board of directors of Green Space in 2018 and 19, and I am currently serving as an area representative on the North Coast Advisory Council as well. These positions and experiences have given me the knowledge and the ability to work cooperatively with the public, my fellow committee and board members, as well as skills in researching for the necessary data and information to make responsible decisions on behalf of the community. If elected as board of director, I pledge to represent all of Cambria and make informed decisions based on the best interest on our community as a whole. We need to move forward with the repairs and upgrades to our water and and wastewater systems. And I guess I need to stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. And David. David, you need to unmute yourself. We will start the clock over again.
Pardon me. Good evening. I too would like to thank the League of Women Voters and the Lions, and thank everyone for attending the forum. I'm an independent candidate seeking re-election to the board. My sole agenda is wanting to continue the board and continue on the board and to serve the community. I feel that my business and engineering experience has served me well and the community well in the last 3 years. I led the town hall, which set goals for the district after the community was able to share their views with the board. I led the effort to hire a new general manager and spent many hours mentoring him as he came on board. I served as chair of the finance committee when we found issues with bookkeeping and the audits. I currently chair the resources and infrastructure committee and am making sure that the monies that we are collecting are going to be spent well. I have scrutinized each budget that comes before us, and I make it a priority to challenge expenditures and continually call for more efficiency in the way the district is run. If elected, I will lead the effort to set substantive goals for the district during our strategic planning process. The process will allow us to begin working on those issues that are important to the community but have been neglected in the past. Among those are the forest management plan, the community recreation plan, and working more with the county on homeless and other challenges. My demeanor on the board has been steadying and influencing and calming influence. I listen and understand the viewpoints presented before making decisions. My leadership and integrity have made a difference on the board. I'm asking tonight for your support and for your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, David. So we will turn now to the questions. Tom, you have the first question. The CCSD is a complex district with utilities, a fire company, and a budget of $10 million. What qualifications and or experience do you have that will allow you to make informed decisions? Tom, you need to unmute yourself and we'll start the clock.
Hang of this eventually. Thank you. You can hear me now. It's a very good question because it pertains not just to issues, but also to the ability to manage or to be a board member, a member of a directing board, not a general manager for a as you say, a complex organization. I'll tell you about two things I think are strong points for me. One is a matter of individual achievement or individual qualities. The other one is experience in working with committees and so forth. I have a background in communications, journalism. I've basically made my living talking to experts, figuring out what they're saying, explaining it to people who need to be, you know, we need to have it explained in a way that is understandable. I have done work for academic institutions, dealing with astrophysicists and economists. I've done work, covered local governments. And so I've learned a great deal about what makes things tick and what makes local government tick, especially, and how to translate technical knowledge into terms that people can really understand and be persuaded by. My experience on boards, a number of boards in public sector, I think I mentioned Resources and Infrastructure Committee. We have a great group of Resources and Infrastructure Committee people here, is part a large part of it. And also nonprofits and advocacy. So I have
Thank you. Both qualities. Thank you, Tom. I'm going to have to stop you there. Thank you. Thank you.
I think you're coming to me next, and I would appreciate it, but Sharon, excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I don't know if Tom was able to, but I'm not able to see the 30-second and the stop sign, so I think that needs to be available to us so we know when we're running low on time.
You didn't see the sign?
Well, I didn't see it for Tom. Maybe he did.
Let me ask a question.
I didn't see the 30-second sign.
You did not see
it. I was caught by surprise, actually.
All right. Thank you for letting me know. We'll try to work on that. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Harry, it is your turn to answer that question. Do you need to have it repeated?
That would be a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you. CCSD is a complex district with utilities, a fire company, and a budget of $10 million. What qualifications and or experience do you have that will allow you to make informed decisions?
Well, first off, I've lived in this community for 34 years. I think I have a pulse on the community as to how they feel about the issues in this town. And while that may seem like it translates to how we incorporate, you know, knowledge about money, I think good judgment, common sense, a logical way of spending the ratepayers' money is the best approach that one could take to dealing with the finances at the district. We've had serious challenges over the years. Thankfully, let's say in the last 4 or 5 years, we've been able to kind of right the ship with regard to making proper decisions with regard to finances. And I'm grateful to have been involved in that process. With regard to the fact that we are an extensive organization, we are essentially, you know, a water and sewer services district. And I believe that we've made more than adequate progress over the past few years in dealing with the issues with regard to infrastructure, with regard to the functioning of the fire department. I would say that just having lived here, having been aware of what's been going on for the years that I've lived here, caring deeply about this community, and just wanting to be as knowledgeable as possible with regard to the issues in this community and how the district operates. Those are probably my goals of wanting to be curious, wanting to be creative, wanting to be inventive as to how to deal with the financial and structural issues of the district. I haven't even seen the 30-second sign come up. So I can't imagine saying anything more than that, except my passion for this community, how the district operates, and wanting to do things right to serve the members of this community is what gives me, I believe, as much knowledge as anybody else and as much passion to do right. Thank you. And I still didn't see the 30 seconds or the stop sign. Thank you.
Thank you. Something that I can do that might help is when I see the 30-second sign, I will hold up 3 fingers. Will that help?
Can't hurt.
Okay.
Sharon, I think it would be better if the timer just left the 30-second sign up instead of putting it up and taking it down. Just leave it up there.
We will do that, too.
I could also like to recommend that you start viewing everything in what they call gallery view. If you're seeing a large screen of individuals, that's possibly the problem, is it's coming up in the small corner up at the top of the screen. So up at the top corner of your Zoom window, you'll see one that says speaker view. If you have not selected that, or gallery view.
And you want us in gallery view.
I do want you in gallery view. Sorry for not interrupting.
Okay. So Karen, you're the next one to answer that question. And would you like it repeated?
Yes, please.
The CCSD is a complex district with utilities, a fire company, and a budget of $10 million. What qualifications and or experience do you have that will allow you to make informed decisions?
As having been the president of a board of another district for 10 or more years, I had to deal with a lot of issues dealing with funding for infrastructure, getting contracts and all of that, and knowing how to make the people's money go towards what it was supposed to go for. We, in the last few years, our board has become more open and more transparent and more involved in what is going on with our finances. We have a finance advisory committee, a standing committee on finances, and I have paid very close attention to all of their meetings and all of their recommendations to the board. And I follow their budget religiously so I can see that the ratepayers' monies are spent on the items that they need to be spent on. I just think that that will help me, along with the other fellow board members, if I get elected, know when decisions are made that are in the best benefit of the ratepayers. Thank you.
I'm going to talk to the timer for a second. Cynthia, just leave the 30 seconds signed up when they only have 30 seconds left.
Okay.
And I will also show three fingers at the same time.
Okay.
The next person to speak then is David on that question. Do you need it repeated, David? Please unmute yourself. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I've had over 30 years of experience as a businessman and an engineer, and both of those have served me well in the last 3 years on the board. I was in charge of a $100 million enterprise for the train company. I was a professional engineer registered in the state of in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And both of these have given me the expertise to really be able to look at what's going on in the district and make good decisions. The other thing that I did was right after I was appointed, I spent a day with the fire department and went around with them and saw exactly what they do on a daily basis and talked to the firemen and got a real good feel for exactly where we were with the fire department. So I think that my experience before the board and my experience on the board has given me a real leg up in being able to make good decisions for the community. Thank you.
Thank you. So that completes the first round, and we will go to the second question. And Harry, you are the person to start this question off. This deals with the water facility. The SWF consumes over $1 million a year in maintenance and operation funds and provides no benefits to that ratepayers. When are we going to decommission this facility?
Oh, that's kind of a loaded question. When are we going to decommission the facility? I'm not so sure that that's really the wise move to take. This plant has essentially, it operated briefly back in 2015 and 2016, provided a very minor amount of acre feet of water with regard to the community. That was mainly for testing purposes. Now, since then, it hasn't operated for a variety of reasons, including the fact that we have yet to have the coastal development permit go before the various agencies that need to approve it. Once the plant is available to operate, then we would make the decision as to when to put it to good use. It essentially was permitted as an emergency water facility for existing customers only and not for growth. As a result, I would say, and by the way, there is a rumor around that some of us that are running, some candidates, would simply like to shut the plant down. Like I said, that's probably not the wise decision. If we come to a point where we've had less than adequate rainfall, then we can use the plant to provide the water that's necessary for the residents and businesses of the community, and also to replenish the aquifer to provide for the natural habitat where the water from San Simeon Creek is what is the water that is provided to the SWF. So that's how I feel that it should be used. Like I say, when need be, when we haven't had an adequate amount of water, and just for existing customers only, and not for growth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Harry. So that same question goes now to Karen. Would you like it repeated?
Sure.
Okay. The SWF consumes over $1 million a year in maintenance and operation funds and provides no benefits to ratepayers. When are we going to decommission this facility?
This facility was built to make sure that Cambrians did not run out of water during a drought. We have paid a lot of money to build this facility. We need to use it to make sure we don't run out of water during a drought. This is, most people express their opinion of what water security is knowing that when they turn on the faucets, they have water and that they're not going to have to haul buckets of water and skip showers and all of that like we had to do before during the stage 3 water shortage emergency. We need this facility in order to make sure that we have water when we need it. And decommissioning it is not the thing to do. We have a very large loan on this facility that we need to continue to pay for. And part of the terms of that loan is that we keep it in good operational order. Thank you.
So the same question to David.
Thank you. I agree with Ms. Dean that we should not decommission this. We actually don't spend $1 million plus on operations and maintenance. $600,000 plus of that is to pay off the loan. And the amount we have that we've paid on operations and maintenance has been coming down considerably as we get the SWF in place and ready to go. The SWF was built in order to provide us a stable water supply. I believe that's what we will be able to do. We need to turn it on after we get the approved CDP, and we need to turn it on only when we need it to avoid going to a stage 3 emergency, as Ms. Dean said. Thank you.
Tom, would you like to respond to that question, please? Don't forget to unmute yourself.
Well, I don't think the proposal to decommission the SWF is really seriously, entertained by a lot of people. I do think, though, there is a debate going on. You might hear more questions that relate to it about how to use it and when it gets its coastal development permit from the county and then the Coastal Commission, how much it's used. I think the danger of not using it or having too restrictive a rule, for instance, using it only in emergencies or when an emergency looms, is that you could go years without running it for maintenance purposes to basically use the filters and a lot of things. This is a complicated piece of machinery. And I think the danger really is mothballing it in effect. They just had to replace filters, for instance. I got $50,000. Reverse osmosis is expensive. So we need a flexible permit that allows the CCSD and the judgment of its operators and its chief engineer to use the facility so that it can be used and we know it would be used in an emergency and it would be capable of operating. I think limiting it to emergencies only is kind of like buying a car, putting it in the garage for 10 years, and then when you really need it, trying to use it because you don't know what's going to happen in the meantime. I do think that the rule of operation is probably what people are arguing about most. And the other point I'd like to make, and I think Harry touched on it, you cannot really make it for current development only. If you have an adequate water supply, you're going to have to basically do something about the moratorium if you have adequate water and you don't have an emergency. And we're going to have to deal with that issue. And if you say we can have a moratorium continue and still have an adequate water supply, you're really not telling the whole story.
Thank you, Tom, for answering that question. We now move to the third question. And Karen, you will start this question. Do you favor a coastal development permit that would allow operation of the SWF only during stage 3 drought emergency conditions, Why or why not?
I would prefer we not get totally into a stage three water shortage emergency before we turn it on. We need to pay attention to our well levels, the weather, you know, whether we're going into a drought or not, to know that we can turn it on in advance of that and avoid a stage three water shortage emergency. I think that answers your question. Thank you.
So the next same question goes now to David.
Yes, I agree that we should not wait till we have a stage three emergency. We need to run the SWF when we meet certain parameters, and whether that's not enough water and the wells are going down, or whether that's the salt water intrusion coming in, or whether that's once a year to operate it for a couple of weeks in order to make sure that it runs well and that it's being maintained well. We need to get the coastal development permit approved and have the least number of restrictions possible on our use so that we, the local people, can make the decision as to when and when we do run it and when we do not need to run it. And that will be a debate that we will have after we get all of the data, all of the ideas on restrictions from the agencies, et cetera, and when we get a urban water master plan updated that gives us an idea as to what our demand is and what that supply will be running the SWF. Thank you.
Tom, same question to you.
Yes, thank you. I agree with what Dave said in particular about having the flexibility to use it as the CCSD sees fit. And parameters for operation are very important. And I think this is one of those things that's going to be worked out in the process of the permit being drafted and granted. The key thing, I think, is to have an adequate and reliable water supply for Cambria in dry conditions, drought conditions, any kind of climate conditions going forward. And we have to be, you know, keeping the system operable, making sure that the environment around it is not being affected by drought or by subsidence or intrusion of wastewater, saltwater, and so forth. So it's a critical tool in maintaining a safe water supply. I do think this is where I'm not an engineer. I'm not a technician. I do think the CCSD has people on staff, its district engineer, its water systems operator, who should be listened to as to when to run it, why to run it, how to maintain it. I'd also note in relation to another point that David made earlier, the actual budget, I think, for the SWF, which includes about $660,000 a year in debt payments, is actually under $1 million for the coming year. So indeed, the research, the maintenance and operation of it has gone down in price.
Thank you, Tom. Harry, same question to you. I want to make sure to unmute yourself, Harry.
I just said, if you don't mind, just run it by my ears one more time, okay?
Yes, I'd be happy to. The question is, do you favor a coastal development permit that would allow operation of the SWF only during stage three drought emergency conditions? Why or why not?
Well, I would concur with everyone that has spoken so far. We don't want it to get to that circumstance where the well levels are in dangerous condition, where there's a possibility of saltwater intrusion. We don't want that to happen. We certainly want to use the foresight and be proactive when we see that we've had a sufficient lack of water and therefore we need to run the plant. I do want to make a comment. And obviously, this is as much to provide water for us as well to provide for the well-being of the habitat around San Simeon Creek. With regard to the comments that have been made about finances, which I don't think is a part about this particular question, but since it has been brought up, let me just make mention of the fact that while the costs of the plant have gone down and saying, well, it's going to be for the past two years, it's been about $1 million a year. Prior to that, it was $2.2 million a year. But I think I'm getting kind of off track here. A question is going to be coming up in that regard. But what I want to say is the more we operate the plant, the more costly it is with regard to the trucking of brine waste and everything else that comes along with operating the plant. So I want people to keep that in mind, that it's not a static amount of money that is being spent when we operate the plant. The more you operate it, the more demands there are on the ratepayers of this community. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. We move now to the fourth question. And David, you start this round. When and how should the SWF be operated to most benefit and safeguard our community?
Again, the SWF needs to be run when certain parameters are met, and whether that's well levels or the seawater intrusion or whichever it is. I would like to continue to say that the current process of going through and getting the coastal development permit is an important step towards when and how we're going to be able to run it. We are currently working with five different agencies and making sure that the SWF and when we run it is okay for the environment and the habitat of San Simeon Creek. We are gathering data now, and we have been for several months, and we are doing an in-stream flow study that will give us a lot more data. And as we work with these agencies, we'll be able to come down and get a parameter as to exactly when is it that we can run it and still maintain the environment and the habitat. And that's something that we're going to have to live with. But overall, we're going to be able to run the thing when we need it. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Same question to you, Tom. Don't forget to unmute.
Just to follow up actually on what David said, the running of the plant is going to be parameter-based. It's going to be based on things that we measure as to when the best time to do it. But I also wanted to maybe respond to something Harry said a little while ago about the cost of operating it. It is in fact a significant factor, been about 3/4 of that cost, which is maybe about a little over $80,000 a month, is the brine disposal, brine hauling. I think the CCSD has done something wise in this latest budget of setting aside basically reserve for 2 months of operation. And I believe it should continue to do so, so that when we need to run it a lot, say in a severe drought, it won't be a incredibly expensive proposition. In other words, people are already paying a certain amount of money to operate the SWF when it's not being operated. So that's the good news. I also support any effort, any engineering studies or negotiations with other districts and so forth that could lead to a cheaper method of brine disposal. There are a couple of possibilities that are out there. They're way down the line in terms of getting permitted and doing environmental work, but When 3/4 of the cost of operation is brine disposal, it really does make a difference to make brine disposal cheaper. And so I'd like to see the trucking be replaced with something much better and more efficient.
Thank you, Tom. Harry, the question goes to you.
I don't necessarily want to get off track, but let me put it this way. With regard to the operation of this facility, with regard to the brine waste, one of the proposals that was put forth that isn't going to happen was that we build a pipeline from Cambria to San Simeon. San Simeon has an ocean outfall that's kind of grandfathered, so they're able to use it. And so there was a plan for us to build a pipeline from Cambria to San Simeon. It's going to cost about $1 million a mile, about $2.5 million, so we could take the brine and pipe it down to San Simeon and then put it out in the ocean. I think the important thing that I want to point out is we are supposed to be stewards of planet Earth. If we can't see that that's necessary now more than any time in the history of humanity, it's now. The idea of the fact that just the idea of the fact that this plant produces the brine waste, which is a combination of treated wastewater, a little bit of salt water, and water from the aquifer and the creek, and combining that so we can have a little bit more water to drink. And then this brine waste comes up that is very expensive to get rid of. We kind of have to take a look at our obligation to the planet. Do we really need to be producing a waste material that winds up either going to Oceano or over to Kettleman City, diesel trucks, and this brine waste that's being, let's put it this way, somebody else is having to deal with our waste product that we do here. We need to seriously look at our impact on Mother Earth. I could talk about the finances, but time is about up. Maybe that'll come up in another question. Thank you. By the way, I do want to mention, well, no, I'll let it go. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. You're muted.
Sharon, you're muted.
Sharon, you're muted.
Thank you. When and how should the SWF be operated to most benefit and safeguard our community?
Okay. We're in the process of getting the permanent permit for this facility. The county has put an information hold on it, waiting for quite a bit of data and studies to be done before this can move forward. It is under review of a lot of agencies, and we will not know until we are finally done with all of this process, until it goes through the Coastal Commission, until they put down what their restrictions and guidance are for running this facility. I repeat what I said before, when I think we should run it, and I think we should run it to avoid having to go into a stage three water shortage emergency. We need to run it when the well levels are low, when it appears we're going into a drought, and yes, as others have said, to avoid seawater intrusion. As far as the comment on how to dispose of the brine waste, what Harry has mentioned, that was initial thought of putting it out into the ocean and using the San Simeon pipeline outfall. You know, we couldn't do a seawater desalination plant with ocean intake and outfall because we are in a marine sanctuary. San Simeon is in a marine sanctuary, whether that's grandfathered in or not. So same situation. I guess I'm supposed to stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Since all of you are talking about brine, that is the next question. And Tom, it starts with you. Here's the question. Given that cost is a major concern about trucking the brine away, would you support a joint effort enabling Cambria's wastewater treatment plant to handle San Simeon's waste for a fee in exchange for the CCSD using San Simeon's ocean outfall permit to reduce the cost of brine disposal?
Well, this continues a little discussion we've been having already about brine disposal in San Simeon. I think there are a couple of questions that need to be answered, obviously, about the idea of exchanging San Simeon's wastewater for our ability to use their outfall for our brine. One, of course, is the capacity of our system, of our wastewater system. It's a large system, and was built for quite a bit larger community than Cambria is today and will be. But I think we need to really be careful not to overcommit. They take about 70 gallons a minute of waste coming, which is much, much less than Cambria produces. But that's a factor. The other factor, which Harry touches on, is that the San Simeon does have a ocean outfall for its treated waste. It is sewage. I mean, it's treated sewage, but it's not the same substance. It's not the same material as the brine that is produced by the SWF. And about that brine, though, it's much fresher than seawater. It is actually 40% of the salinity of seawater. It is non-hazardous waste. It's not considered dangerous. It has basically, it's a somewhat concentrated version of the groundwater there. And so, you know, we'd have to get a lot of stakeholders on board. It's Coastal Commission, the federal government, because it's a national marine sanctuary. But, and then the money would have to come from somewhere. San Simeon is probably more qualified for grants than we are, but I think we should look into it because I think it would save a lot of money for everybody.
Thank you, Tom. Harry, the question goes to you now. Same question about the brine and the cost. Would you like it repeated? Please unmute yourself.
Yes, if you don't mind. I have short-term memory. Thank you.
Given that cost is a major concern about trucking the brine away, would you support a joint effort enabling Cambria's wastewater treatment plant to handle San Simeon's waste for a fee in exchange for the CCSD using San Simeon's ocean outfall permit to reduce the cost of brine disposal?
Well, you know, that's a two-way question because you can ask Cambria what we would like to do, but you probably need to ask San Simeon. And Gwen Kellis, who at that time was the president, when this discussion was the president of the San Simeon CSD, she stated that her community didn't want any involvement with Cambria, mainly because of our financial challenges that we're dealing with. So in that regard, I'm not so sure that this is going to work, even if we wanted it to. As I said, we're between a rock and a hard place. Initially, there was an impoundment basin adjacent to the facility that was going to handle the brine, up to 1 million gallons worth of brine. Unfortunately, we had a flood that took place, and due to the fact that this design of the impoundment basin was flawed, that impoundment basin got flooded with water, so the place where we were going to originally store the brine is no longer available, and we've had to decommission that. So this has been an ongoing problem, an ongoing issue that won't go away, and I would just have to say that, no, I don't favor using ocean outfall and doing more pollution to the natural environment. We have an obligation to Mother Earth to deal with the situation as best we can, and taking this brine, putting it out in the ocean, isn't going to work, just like trucking it somewhere really isn't going to work. Do I have an answer for the problem? No. But there's got to be, as Tom said, other technologies that hopefully will become available so we don't have to dispose of the brine as the only options that we have at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. Karen, this question goes to you now.
Yes,
would you like it repeated? Okay. Given that cost is a major concern about trucking the brine away, would you support a joint effort enabling Cambria's wastewater treatment plant to handle San Simeon's waste for a fee in exchange for the CCSD using San Simeon's ocean outfall permit to reduce the cost of brine disposal?
No. Okay, so... we have, of course, our wastewater treatment plant can handle more than what we're doing now, but can it handle more than what we're doing now if we have full build outs that several people are advocating for? If we have full build out and we have all those additional sewer connections from our own community, can we handle the additional sewage from San Simeon? And San Simeon's about to lift their moratorium, so they're going to end up having more wastewater produced than what they have now. And no, I don't think we should use an ocean outfall at all. I've already said that I don't think we should use San Simeon's ocean outfall. I don't think we should truck it to Oceano's outfall either. The cost of trucking is not the only issue with trucking it to Oceano. It's also what is in the brine. And I disagree with Tom that it's just simply a low volume of salinity. It also has chemicals from cleaning up the wastewater, along with whatever was removed from the sewage, that effluent that we are running through the facility in there, such as pharmaceuticals and biologicals, all of those kinds of things. If it was not too hazardous to put in the ocean, how come it's not too hazardous to put it right back into the ground? That's it. Thank you.
David, you're on for that one.
Thank you. First, yeah, I would support that if San Simeon would like to pursue treating fluids, as I call it, us taking their waste and they taking our brine. I think that's a reasonable idea. It cuts down on our cost and moves us forward. But they have to come to the table and they have to be willing to do that. And we have to see whether that's ever going to happen. I would like to say that in talking with Matt Keeling of the Regional Wastewater Water Control Board, he thinks that putting the brine into the ocean is the best solution, and thinks that that's exactly what we should be doing, and that it has to be done properly with the proper outfall and the proper mixing, et cetera, et cetera. But we're basically putting brine back into the ocean where, you know, it's already pretty briny, right? I'd also like to comment, I'll leave it at that. We'll get to the other later. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, David. So the next question is about the water wait list. I need, and Tom, you're...
I'm ready.
Did you get a chance to answer that brine question, Tom?
I believe I did, yes. Yes.
Okay. So you answered it first, is what I recall. The brine question you answered first. Yes. So I'm getting myself a little confused. So okay. Harry, you're answering the next question first. And that has to do with the water wait list. Do you feel the CCSD has an obligation to the owners of lots on the water wait list to provide them with water? If yes, how would you make that water available? If no, why not? And how do you propose to relieve the lot owner of the financial burden of owning a piece of property that you would consider useless?
This is probably one of the most controversial issues that exists in this community with regard to do we allow further building or not. It seems as if progress is like building, growing, that type of thing. You know, growth can be either a sense of greater sense of responsibility, greater sense of maturity, having wisdom to do the right thing. Growth is also, let's say, a tumor, a growth that can ultimately destroy its host. There are a number of people in this community that would wish to build out the water wait list. I don't happen to be one of them. Cambria, as it is right now, is the way it should remain. I've had people visit here, talked with them. They say, you know, where I live, it's grown. There's more noise pollution. There's more people. And it's not like the way it used to be. And I don't want Cambria to become a used-to-be town. One of the major challenges that we have also is evacuation in time of fire. And the idea of building more houses when we're already challenged in that area could really compromise the ability to evacuate the community in an efficient fashion if we had more people living here. I feel badly for the folks that have spent money hoping that they could build here, but I don't think it would be a wise decision to move forward in that regard. I could probably say more, but I think I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Harry. Karen, the same question to you.
I think the community's first obligation is to the people that are here now and needing to make sure before we decide whether or not we're going to build that we have sufficient water for human consumption, sanitation, and fire protection for the people that are here. In 2013, when we started realizing that we were having problems with our well levels, and then in January of 2014, we declared a stage 3 water shortage emergency, and everybody had to start hauling buckets and not flushing and not watering their plants and all of that, kind of showed us that we possibly do not have enough water to cover all of those things for the people that are here. We don't know yet exactly how the water facility is going to help us as far as going towards building. There's a lot of other things, as Harry said, that we need to consider, and that's fire evacuation. You know, there's California is burning up all over. We've only had 2 studies so far about fire evacuation and how long it's going to take to get the people out of these neighborhoods. We have 494 waitlist positions on Lodge Hill, and the last study showed that with the current population here, figuring two cars per home, worst case scenario, was going to take over 4.5 hours to evacuate this area. That's something that we need to talk about before we talk about building. It would not be fair to connect more people and then tell them later, we do not have enough water for you. You can't go backwards. So we need to make sure we have an adequate idea of supply and demand before we make that decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. So David, you're next on that question.
Thank you. The idea that we either have enough water or do not have enough water for a build out is going to take a process. The beginning of that process is finding out whether the sustainable water facility can add sufficient water to sustain us that are currently here during a drought. How much water can it produce and still maintain the environment out there? That's something we have to find out. That's a process. We're going to go through that process. After we get done with that process, the Urban Water Master Plan that is currently being worked on is also going to go through the process of looking at the supply that we will then have and the demand that we will then have. And that demand should include all of the housing that is currently not being lived in, because due to COVID-19, there's a good chance that more of the housing that is now empty most of the time in our community, something like 30%, would be occupied. That process we have to go through. We get the urban water management plan in front of us. We see what the supply is. We see what the demand is. Then we start talking about all the other issues with the county, because the county is the one that has land use authority and will set whether we can grow or not and how fast. And that we need to sit down with them and make sure they understand evacuation routes, the wildfire risk, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you.
Unmute, Sharon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I would be happy to repeat.
That's fine.
You don't need the question repeated? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think both Karen and David make very good points, because the decision as to when, how, and how much to open the wait list has to depend on having credible projections of supply and demand. We're working, the data is being collected, it's being analyzed, we're not there yet. And that's a decision that's going to be made maybe a couple of years from now when the coastal development permit is awarded to the SWF. I'm glad that both Harry and Karen mentioned wildfire evacuation, because, you know, that to me is a much more urgent issue than any decision about growth, because the decision about growth is going to come down the line, and the impact of whatever growth happens, which will be pretty minor, especially for a few years, is not going to make a big difference for fire. But I think for fire right now, we've been very lucky in Cambria not to have a wildfire go through here. We all remember, I think we're all awakened back in August by that lightning show that went past us offshore 30 miles off and then hit the Bay Area and caused absolute havoc. And here, it could have been us if it had been a little bit to the east. So we do have to work now on wildfire protection, evacuation, the whole gamut of things that need to be done to protect us from that. And I think we separate it from the growth issue, because the growth issue is a long-term issue. Fire is a near-term now issue.
Thank you, Tom.
Welcome.
Karen, this question goes to you. And the question has to do with coastal development permit. What position would you take in supporting the district's effort to obtain the permit from the CCC, California Coastal Commission?
We need to get the permit. I mean, we got a $4.3 million grant that requires we get a permanent permit for this. The emergency development permit that we got for the EWS required that we went ahead and obtained a permanent coastal development permit. I fully support this permit moving forward and getting through the Coastal Commission so that we can see finally what we can and cannot do with this facility. I think that answered your question. Thank you.
Thank you. David, you same question to you.
Yes, we're already working with the Coastal Commission, and they are the ones that are reviewing the in-stream flow study that we plan to do. They are looking at the data, and so, yes, they will weigh in on the coastal development permit, and we expect them to, and that's great. So we will get their input, and we will move on from there. Thank you.
Tom, same question?
Yeah, I second what Dave and Karen say. I mean, I think we need the permit. We need to, you know, keep pushing for it, keep working with the Coastal Commission. I do think it would be good if the CCSD board really, really presented a united front and spoken one with one voice to the Coastal Commission when this does come to them. I do think it's crucial to the community. This is kind of our last chance of having a supplemental water supply, I think, and I do think it's crucial to the community that this get approved. So we do need to, you know, promote it aggressively, you know, energetically, eloquently, and get the public on our side. And I do think the coastal commissioners are persuadable and the staff can be worked with. And I think we'll do it. But I think we all have to be together on it.
Thank you, Tom. Harry, same question to you.
Well, certainly we need to obtain the coastal development permit ultimately from the California Coastal Commission. But if I could just make mention of the 6-year history of this facility. Initially, what you're supposed to do, you get a permit. Then what you do is you make a proposal. You make a design. You present that design. You do an EIR on the project, that gets approved, and then you go and get the permit. You get the permit first, then you make the design, that gets approved, then you build the plant. We did it backwards. We built the plant, then had an EIR. It had certain flaws in it, including regarding the environment, and various agencies let us know about that. We did a subsequent EIR, and now 6 years later, $18 million later, since that's how much we've spent on the facility so far, we are now going for the permit. So there's just been a kind of a haphazard approach to this facility being built bass-ackwards, this entire process. So now here we are 6 years later, about to get the perhaps about to get the permit. I certainly support doing that so we can use this facility when needed for the current residents of this community and for environmental protection as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Karen, this next question goes to you first. It is on fire safety. What is your position on growth and realistic safety plans for Cambria?
Again, I think it's premature to talk about growth until we take care of the issues that we have with forest management, fire protection, adequate evacuation routes, and adequate water for firefighting. As several of us have said already, and I think Tom particularly said it, fire safety is the number one priority right now with everything that is going on in California. And we need to work together with whatever agencies that are you know, applicable to find another evacuation route out. The only way that the people in Lodge Hill all the way down to Marine Terrace can get out is through Burton and Ardeth. And like I said, they're predicting worst case scenario at taking about 4.5 hours. If you grow and you add that 454 more or 494 more homes up here, how long is it going to take? The Fire Safe Focus Group, which David is in charge of, has been doing a lot of work and a lot of investigation on this. And I would like to see this situation taken care of before we talk about growth. Thank you.
David.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I am the moderator of the Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group, and we have been working diligently with the county and other agencies in order to do a get a better evacuation route. Lieutenant Coomer with the California Highway Patrol has been working with the Office of Emergency Services at the county in order to update the plans for how to get us out of here. One of the things I have taken leadership on and done was I wrote a grant, and we received $5,000 to get over 300 cones, traffic cones, that will allow us, with Lieutenant Coomer's help, to open up and have two lanes of traffic going south instead of just one lane of traffic going south during evacuation periods. This will cut in half, probably, the amount of time that it will take to evacuate the Lodge Hill area from 4 hours to 2 hours. Still unacceptable, but we have to take the leadership and go and talk to the county and work with the county to get more access, more egress points out of our community, and we need to do that now, not sometime later on or anything like that. This is one of the number one things that we have to do. We also need a forest management plan that has been ignored in this community for a long time. We need to sit down with all the stakeholders, get that done, get a forest manager on board. I don't know how we're going to pay for the guy, but we got it, our girl, but we got to get that person on board to help us manage the forest better. Thank you.
Tom?
Yeah, like a shout out to Dave for his work on the Fire Safe Focus Group, which is an important, very important, you know, meeting house of agencies are working on fire protection. I think the one success we've had recently is the Highway 1 plan that really originated with the NCAC, North Coast Advisory Council, and the Transportation Committee there, of which I was co-chair. And we were the ones who got the county moving on it and got the Kevin Coomer involved. And I think it has borne fruit. And I give David credit for getting the grant for the actual physical cones that are needed for it. That's just the start of something. And I think speaking of the things that David and Karen were speaking of, evacuation routes, we need to be a little more expansive in our thinking, I think, because there are places that in Cambria, say Marine Terrace, close to the ocean, where people really don't know where they're going to go. And they all think they're going to go to the ocean. I think we need to start looking at neighboring areas around Cambria, perhaps a route outside to the south through the Norris Rancho to Harmony Ranch Road, a route from Park Hill off of Huntington over to Highway 1. We have to start thinking more energetically and aggressively about these things and working with state agencies, the county, and of course the county Fire Safe Focus Group to get these things done. And on fire management, I think safety first, fire safety first, on forest management rather than safety first. We have to make that the principle.
Sharon, could you unmute your microphone, please?
Harry, would you like that question repeated?
Yeah, yes, please.
What is your position on growth and realistic fire safety plans?
Well, I've already mentioned my position on growth. With regard to fire evacuation, you know, the fact that we can no longer have a town hall meeting in some ways, unfortunately, kind of limits the availability of members of the community to gather together and share information. I think one of the major challenges is probably each neighborhood needs to be knowledgeable as to what kind of evacuation we take, and people discussing in their own neighborhoods which direction we would go. I would just say, like, top of the world, be a good idea. Just go down Pine Ridge, go down Pickwick, and go down Green Street to come up with Ardeth instead of everybody funneling over to Ardeth, no matter where you are. People that say that when you go up the hill and you get to Berwick. I would think everybody from Berwick and Benson going downhill should probably evacuate to the west. The chances of fire down in that area, there are very little trees on Marine Terrace. So we need to be, you know, like I say, forward-looking our thinking with regard to which area, what areas go in which direction. The serious challenge, though, is how many people are going to be in this community when we do have to evacuate the town. And no matter how wise we are, no matter what wisdom we use to the advantage to leaving this town, more people will only complicate the situation. Thank you.
Thank you. There is another question on wildfires that is on the minds of most Cambrians. I think I'm going to skip it and with my discretion and go to the next question. Tom, you will answer this question first. And it is about a town hall meeting that occurred in 2019 that mentioned that there would be a 2020 regulatory update by the state to review data that would be relevant to the urban management plan. Where is the CCSD in this process and how does it affect our water issues going forward?
I'm not going to get into the specifics of the town hall meeting itself. And what I do know is that the Resources and Infrastructure Committee actually had an ad hoc committee that got this going. I mean, we basically did some preliminary work on data to give to the consultant who is doing this urban water management plan. Now, this has been mentioned several times. That what it is, it's a state document that is filed every 5 years. It's updated every 5 years. It's called the Urban Water Management Plan, and it essentially says, how are we going to provide water to our public? And it's over really 20 years you're talking about. How much do we have, and how much do we have in relation to what the demand is going to be? In the past, these documents have been fairly, they haven't been that deep on the issue of demand. And I think this one, and it's costing a little more to do, is going to get into very detailed projections of what demand would be under a number of scenarios. Like, for instance, the one I think David mentioned, people who are part-time moving here full-time. And also, speaking of something that was an unknown last year, what happens because of the pandemic? Does that drive more people here? All these things have to be put into the hopper of the analysis. And we expect sometime next year, mid-year probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this work will be done. This is going to be the basis for our decision making about how to deal with the wait list, how to manage new connections and so forth. And it's on the way. It's in the progress.
Thank you. Harry, would you like to answer that question, please?
With regard to the Urban Watershed Management Plan, which comes up every 5 years, you know, we're entering a new decade. Obviously, there's a tremendous number of unknowns on the horizon. And I think we need to kind of think outside the box as to with regard to water use or non-water use. And what I mean by that is a greater use of gray water systems. In other words, using water from bathing, washing dishes and laundry to maintain landscaping, especially in the summer months. That's when much water gets used, more water gets used than at other times. I know this is going to sound like I'm being very extreme here, but we should also consider waterless toilets. The reason I bring this up is because this is one of the pet projects of Bill Gates right now. With regard to the availability of water, using waterless toilets, which are hygienic, they're clean, they're odorless. And as a result, you can use our waste material for composting. You can use urine for watering the yard. I know this sounds like, well, Harry, that's crazy. Who would want to do that? Well, keep in mind, if you're drinking water that's produced from your wastewater facility, it's treated wastewater mixed with water. So we need to think outside of the box as to the water we can produce and the water that we don't have to use as we move forward into the next decade. Thank you.
Okay, and let's see. That same question would go to, who hasn't answered it yet?
Me.
Okay, Karen, go for it.
Would you repeat it?
Yes. It was about the urban development plan and or urban, I'll read it again. A town hall meeting in 2019 mentioned that there would be a 2020 regulatory update by the state to review data relevant to the urban management plan. Where is the CCSD in this process and how does it affect our water issues going forward?
Okay. As Tom mentioned, we had an ad hoc committee. I served on it with Tom and with a couple of other people where we researched documents regarding the water use in this community and water production. We also served on an ad hoc committee together to study water demand and supply, and we were unable to come up with a conclusive, any kind of a conclusive end to this thing on how much water we had and what the demand was due to a lack of data. The retrofit data wasn't updated. We didn't know, you know, like we've mentioned before, how many part-time homes were now becoming full-time homes, you know, those kinds of things. When we were on the ad hoc committee for the urban water management plan, that's what we did is we hunted down data, previous documents that we could put together in a file for the consultant that the district has hired to work on this urban water management plan for us. And this is the same consultant that's also helping with the some of the data required for the CDP. Anyway, my understanding is this probably will be coming forward in 2021, like June or July, I think is when we're due to see this completed. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And David.
Yes, we are working on the urban water management plan. This month was supposed to be the month that the state came out with their final requirements for the new urban water management plan. And to my knowledge, they have not done that yet. Once that comes out, we'll have a much better idea as to exactly what we want done. But in the meantime, we're making some progress on getting it finished. The deadline is generally July 1st of next year, 2021, to have that on file and sent to the state. My guess is since they're late with their thing, that they will allow us to go past that somewhat. But again, that is the key document that is going to give us data on the demand and supply in different scenarios as to what we can and cannot do and with the SWF operating and without it operating, and what we can do about growth, if anything. So stay tuned. The consultants are working on it, but probably won't have a definitive answer on that until next summer sometime. Thank you.
Tom, have you had a chance to answer that question?
Yeah.
I believe I was first.
Thank you. So now we move to Harry. I have a question for him, and in my discretion, there's two questions that I'm actually going to combine into one. You can take them both, or you can use whichever one you want to. Name a few ways the CCSD could be cutting costs or saving money, and why do you think that there is so much drama around the CCSD year after year, and what would you do to help Cambria to get together on key issues?
Why is there so much drama? I think it's a combination of things. First off, we have some very bright people in this community that are vigilant with regard to how the district is and isn't operating. And so as a result, these folks come to various meetings and speak their mind and maybe you might say create a little bit of controversy. However, I think the most important thing is that down through the years, people in positions of responsibility and authority at the district have not used their position wisely with regard to being effective in dealing with the problems at the district. I'll use, for example, I recall back in 2017, April 1st, 2017, our general manager at that time, Jerry Gruber, a group of us were meeting over at the Stewart Street tanks. And he said, well, you know, this tank's 27 years old. We need to build a new one. We're just going to decide, is it going to be a bolted or a welded tank? One's a little cheaper, one will last longer. A month later, at the end of April, he said, no, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to make some minor adjustments. William Bellis, who is the person that we've used for this kind of issue for a number of years, said, you need a new water tank. So you might ask, well, why are people concerned? It's because of poor judgment, poor decision-making that has taken place over the years at the top, and probably to some degree has taken place on the board as well. I would say this much, though, with the standing committees, the ability to have volunteers, people that are devoting their time and their knowledge and expertise in one fashion or another has really helped kind of, I would hope, lower the drama. And also the fact, like I said, that the public has more of an opportunity to participate in any kind of decision making. I'm hoping that things have been toned down, but we have to be aware of the fact that we have this project that has cost $18 million that we still haven't used. And there's all kinds of
issues. Your time is up there, Harry. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I missed your three.
That's okay.
My apologies.
Karen, so the question is a combined question. One, name a few ways the CCSD could be cutting costs or saving money. And why do you think there's so much drama around the CCSD year after year? And what would you do to bring Cambrian together on key issues? You can answer one or both.
I think there's a lot of drama here because a lot of people feel like they're not being heard. We get the same comments over and over again up at the podium. People ask questions. They're not being answered because if it's an item not on the agenda, the board is not required to answer them. But as Harry mentioned, the fact that we have these standing committees that are open to the public and the public has more opportunity to voice their concerns and speak and have oversight on what is going on with infrastructure, with financing, with policy, and the fact that the current board that we have is more open and transparent than the boards we've had in the past. And I feel like when I'm elected and I'm on the board, I can help with the communication issues back and forth between the community because I'm perfectly willing to listen to everybody on every side, hear their concerns, and hear what their solutions are and take all of that into consideration in making my decisions. Anyway, I hope that helps. Thank you.
David?
Yes, thank you. I really think that a calm demeanor and being able to listen and understand when people are talking to you and really understanding what they're trying to get across and listening to them is important as a board member. I tried to do that when I was, for all 3 years I was on, but especially when I was president, allowing people to speak and allowing people to respond if we thought we had a good answer at the time. I do think that it's calmed down some. I think that some of the people are getting a better understanding as to what's going on in the community. I will say I found out that one of the people that had never been out to the SWF and was a critic of it had never been out there, and I invited that person to go out there, and we were able to give that person a much better idea as to what the plant was all about and why it was there and stuff. And I think that kind of thing is important. Just recently, another person who's very vocal about the CCSD operations and stuff was able to watch as our new Vector truck was cleaning out the sewer pipes and stuff. And I think that kind of thing is important for us to continue to do. Getting the information and getting people to understand exactly what we do in the CCSD, and that will allow them to be calmer about going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Tom?
Yeah, I guess the part of the question I would take is about people's attitude towards the CCSD and why it is. And its reputation has been pretty spotty, to say the least. To pick up on a point, several people, I mean, Dave, I think, has said, people need to know what the CCSD does and what the limits of its activities are. It is the water and sewer service and fire protection, essentially. It has some Parks and Rec responsibility. And I think people also need to get the sense, and this is going to happen over time, that the actual functioning of the CCSD is in competent hands. We've been through a difficult management changeover, and we're now in, a little more than a year into the term of a new general manager. We've got a new district engineer just this beginning of this year. And I do think they're impressive people. I think that they're detail oriented people, which I think has been a problem in the past, or hands-on. I do think if people see that the CCSD is doing its job, and the job is explained to them as to what they are and what the facilities are, I think a lot of the drama at the meetings or surrounding the CCSD will go away. I do think it's a matter of gaining credibility over time with the public.
Thank you, all of you. So that takes us to our closing arguments. And David, you're first. You have 1 minute for that.
I hope we haven't been arguing too much.
I should say that again. Closing statements.
Thank you. I would again like to thank the League of Women Voters and the Lions Club for hosting this, and for all those people who tuned in. I hope you got some answers to some of the questions you've had about where the candidates stand. I would like to continue to provide leadership on the board and continue to move us forward in solving the challenges ahead of us. We need to get a strategic plan together so we have goals that are solid that we can then give to the general manager, that he knows what he needs to be doing because he's got goals to focus on. Again, I'm proud of the work that I've done in the last 3 years. I think we've made a lot of progress, and I hope I've gained the confidence of the voters, and I am asking for your vote in November. Thank you.
Karen, closing statement, please. Uh-oh, are we kicked off?
No, I hit the wrong button. I'm sorry.
Sorry, you have a minute to close.
Okay. Again, thank you to the League of Women Voters and the Lions Club, to ATP Video, and for everyone who watched this. I'm running for director of CCSD because I care very deeply for our wonderful community and the issues that face all of us as Cambria residents and ratepayers. I know we can all work together through listening to each other with respect and openness to the concerns of all Cambrians, and to join together cooperatively in an effort to find solutions to resolve many of the issues facing Cambria and calm much of the division among us. We have a lot of work ahead of us with infrastructure repairs and upgrades, fire safety and preparedness, including adequate evacuation plans, sufficient water storage for firefighting and forest management, making sure we have adequate water to get through drought situations, and of course, the growth issue. I would appreciate your vote in having the opportunity to help work with you, the members of our community and our district, to solve the challenges ahead of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Terry, you have 1 minute to close. Unmute yourself, Harry.
I wish to thank the League of Women Voters, and especially John Nixon, for putting this together, and for all the folks out there in the audience who have taken time to tune in. This is the most important election Camerons have ever had the opportunity to be involved in. You know, in so many ways, the future of our community is in your hands, and the options are very clear as to what could happen in the coming decade. We're all very blessed to live in this most unique and special town that we're able to call home. Please don't vote from a place of fear and insecurity, from a deep appreciation of Cambria we currently have and can maintain and improve upon for years to come by using good judgment and responsible decision-making. Personally, I've been very fortunate and blessed to live in our special town for 34 years. I deeply love and appreciate both the people who live here, as well as the natural environment and the beauty of nature that surrounds us. Once reelected to your CCSD Board of Directors, I promise to continue to do my best to make fiscally responsible decisions as to the spending of your money, to provide the facts to best inform the community, and to serve you once again with honesty and integrity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Harry. Tom, 1 minute, please.
Yes, I also would like to thank the Lions, John Nixon, and the League of Women Voters, especially for helping us navigate the mute button and get through this process. My campaign slogan is bringing Cambria together, and it was something touched on the last question. I do think that in the coming few years, with the more we know, the more we talk to each other, the more we learn about water, growth, fire, I think the potential for coming together much more and arguing less is great. And I want to be a part of that. I want to be on the CCSD board as someone who makes that happen and hopefully gets things done. Just a little note, if you want to see and learn more about me, I have a website. It's tomgrayforccsd.com. It's tomgrayforccsd.com. I ask for your vote. I hope I can serve you. And I've had a great time talking to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, candidates. And I will, in the forum, everyone, please exercise your right to vote. Be informed. Visit Voters Edge to get all the information you need to be an informed voter. And we have a website that's votersedge.org/California. And thank you from the League of Women Voters for all your participation and for those who attended. That concludes our meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.